Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Coding 101 is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Coding 101 is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/C101 and entering the promo code C101. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code C101 in the billing section for a $10 credit. Today on Coding 101, it's part two of PowerShell. And welcome to Coding 101. It's the Twitch show where we let you into the wonderful world of the code warrior, the code monkey. I'm Father Robert Ballister, the digital Jesuit. And along with me is my super special King Kamehameha, mega cool permanent co-host guy. I'm horrible with that title. Mr. Lou Maresca, a lead software developer at Microsoft. Lou, thank you for coming back. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Bugger. Thanks for having me back.
Now, I noticed that you're at home today. You've got a nice warm feel to it. And I'm assuming that since you're near Seattle, it's raining or pouring.
No, sunny and warm, sunny and like breezy today. Real cool. 65 degrees. Not bad.
Go figure. Well, you know what? That means it's a great day to talk a little bit about coding. Now, last week, we did an introduction to PowerShell, and we will be bringing Sarah back. Remember, she's the woman who literally wrote the book on PowerShell. But before that, Lou, there's a couple of items I think we might want to go over. You want to just do some banter here with me?
Let's go for it, yeah.
All right. Well, this first one is all about people who want to run Windows apps on Android. Now, I know you want to do it. I know there's always that one thing, that one program, that one service that you want to bring over to your Android device. And now there's a company out there called CodeWeavers that will let you do it. Kind of. Lou, I don't know if you've heard about this, but CodeWeavers has Crossover. It's a Windows emulator that's been available for Linux for a while, but the company now promises that by the end of the year, they'll be releasing patches to run their Windows emulator on Android. This is a little surprising, because if you've been following the Windows emulation industry, you know that it's a little bit in decline. More and more of these companies, including CodeWeavers, have been, rather than doing emulation, just doing straight porting. They've been helping companies bring their applications from Windows over to Linux or OS X or in whatever direction. So the fact that they're committing resources to bringing their emulator to Android is a little bit puzzling. Let me ask you this, Lou. Emulation used to be big. I mean, we could go back 10, 20, 30 years, and there was always the promise of the next emulator that will make something great, something fantastic. You don't hear about it a whole lot, except in the DIY makerspace. What happened to the emulation industry?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, POSIX, back in the day was a way to emulate, Linux level stuff, at the very lowest level. I mean, there's a lot of emulations get a bad rap because they think, hey, if I run an emulator on Windows or on these other platforms, it's going to run slow. But, there are some really good emulators that can run at the full speed of the hardware, all depending on how the abstraction layer has been built. So it all depends on how they implement this and if they implement it and what version of Windows they're going to be running and emulating in that aspect. So it should be interesting how they do this. And I'm hoping that if it's running on Android, it's more of the mobile flavor of potentially maybe Windows 10 that they can handle. And if that's the case, then you might actually get a full speed of the hardware, so to speak, as long as it's the right flavor for that version of Android, or for that ARM processor that's on there.
Yeah, and unfortunately, see, that's the great limitation, because even CodeWeavers is admitting that the patch that they're going to be releasing for Crossover will work for the x86 implementation of Android. So that's only those devices that are running an Intel CPU and Android. Right. And the reason for that is because they said the ARM binaries that will support the Windows layer, they're just not mature on ARM. And this is one of the big things. It would technically be feasible if Windows wanted to go ahead and push out those drivers and the layer for ARM, right. which they don't really want to do. I mean, I know you can't talk too much about development, but you don't hear that in the whispered halls of Redmond, do you?
I mean, I don't hear anything about WinRT, if that's what you're asking, but yeah. I know that, you know, the whole idea is Windows 10's kernel is compilable and distributable amongst all their platforms. That's why you see Windows Phone moving to the Windows 10's kernel and on ARM processors. So it is capable of doing it, and it's supposed to be a microkernel where it's available across multiple platforms. So I wouldn't see why not, why they couldn't emulate that, you know, or potentially even run it natively on these other devices. So, you know, that could come. It might not come. I'm not sure.
Right. And then I think the other big trend that kind of defeats anyone who wants to do a major emulation update is containerization and virtualization. We saw at VMworld just a couple of months ago that VM is actually putting out a VM that does containers. It's specifically a virtual machine that is set up to run containers to give them the resources right. that they need. And if you're going to do it that way, then you don't really need to put all that much money into emulation. You just have to containerize the apps, which is where we're headed anyways. Besides, I mean, in the modules that you did for C#, you showed several development tools that really allow you to take the same code base, maybe not exactly the same code, but then go ahead and push it out to different platforms. So right. again, emulation works if you've got a legacy app that you really need to run, but not so much forward looking.
Yeah, I think one of the best I've seen so far is React Native and Xamarin. React Native is really cool because React is a JavaScript framework that you can build UIs with, and it now has the ability for you to build the UI in the things that you know, like JavaScript and markup languages, and then it can create native Android and iOS versions of those applications. So you're not just building a one app for the web, you get this other version of it as well. And then, of course, Xamarin, which allows you to build your stuff in C# and .NET. And then as long as you're using the Xamarin UI stuff, you can then build it and compile it down to other, you know, platforms like, you know, Android and iOS. So there is a lot of options out there that you don't necessarily need to go the emulation route.
All right, let's move on. Last week, we talked a little bit about what PowerShell 5 was going to bring to the game. And Sarah brought up the fact that one of the biggest features is the fact that it now has something akin to bringing down a repository, packages that we've already seen in other OSs and other shells, other frameworks. But you came up with a nice comprehensive list of some of the things that we can expect when we get 5 installed on our machines. Can you run it down?
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the big ones was, like Sarah said the last show, was that, you know, one-get, which is one-get, if people are familiar with like NPM for Node, which is a package management system, or NuGet, it's very similar to that, but it's solely built into the operating system, part of the PowerShell command prompt. And so you can actually then download specific packages using one-get. And it's kind of nice. It's actually, a lot of people like it because it feels very like some of these other package management systems. So that's part of it. There's also what they call, there's a concept called DSC. And what that allows you to do is allows you to provide Windows PowerShell language extensions via commandlets. And you can do that declaratively within your environment. And so that allows you to kind of extend the functionality of PowerShell itself. And then there's also what they call classes being defined functionally. So you can basically define classes that give you specific new functionality there. And then there's also enhanced debugging capabilities within PowerShell jobs. So they give you that ability, as well as, again, like I said last time, is additional performance gains when you're calling out to COM objects from your PowerShell command. So I think that's all these kind of enhance the capabilities, and that's why it's majorly supported on Windows 10 up front. Again, there could be coming support for Windows 7 and they're on Windows 8 soon.
Right. And again, one of the things that you brought up last week that I really like is the fact that I'll be able to use PowerShell on Internet of Things enabled devices, the nano kernel that we'll see from right. Windows 10. So that's all good. It all means that we have more to play with and more to look forward with when we get to PowerShell. Now is the time where we're going to introduce our guest. We'll actually reintroduce our guest. That's right, Sarah Dukevich. She is the owner of the Cleveland Tech Space, and she's also the one who wrote the book about PowerShell. Last week, she gave us a quick primer on how we get into PowerShell, which, if you're a Windows user, is easy because it's probably already included in your operating system. And she showed us how to start poking around. When she comes back, She's going to be showing us how to actually start scripting with the language so you can take it home and hopefully blow up your box. But before we do that, let's take a moment to thank the first sponsor of this episode of Coding 101. And I'm going to start with a question, and that is, how much do you sleep? According to a study that I just made up, most people sleep 12 hours a night, and those 12 hours should be spent in comfort. That's totally not true. But no matter how long you spend in bed, it's often a very overlooked part of our lives. We think about the computers that we use. We think about the phones that we have. We think about the cars we drive. But it's strange that we don't put more thought into our sleeping apparatus, which is why we're happy to have Casper as a sponsor of Coding 101. Now, Casper is a different kind of company for your mattress. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They're revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to you, the consumer. Their mattresses are obsessively engineered at a fair price. They include two technologies that really make the name, latex and memory foam. They bring them together for a better night's sleep and for brighter days. It's a comfortable mattress that has just the right sink and bounce. Anyone who's tried to put memory foam on top of their mattress knows the problem that you have. You sink into it, it gets kind of warm, it starts to heat up, and then you end up sweating through your sheets. That's no good. Now, latex will give you more breathability, but it doesn't quite give you that support, not quite the molding comfort that you want at night. So what Casper has done is they've taken those two techs and they put it into one mattress to give you the right amount of support, the right amount of breathability, and just the right amount of comfort. Now, you can buy it easily online and completely risk-free. This is the thing that I really like about it. They understand the importance of trying out a mattress. When you go to a showroom, you might get 2, 3, maybe 5 minutes on top of the mattress. That's not how you should choose something that you're going to be spending so many hours on a night. Casper will deliver the mattress for free to your home, and you can try it for a 100-day period so you don't have to do that 5 minutes in a showroom deciding whether or not this is the mattress you're going to sleep on for the next 5, 10 years. It is the best way to choose a mattress, and it's really what Casper is all about. If you don't like it within that 100-day period, you can painlessly return it and get your money back. Now, Casper mattresses are made in the United States of America, and we believe you're going to love it as much as Leo does. Now, here's what we want you to do. We want you to get a Casper mattress, $500 for a twin or $950 for a king size. Compared to industry averages, that's an outstanding price. And you can save an additional $50 as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/C101 and entering the promo code C101. That's casper.com, casper.com/C101, and the promo code C101. A better night's sleep awaits with Casper. And we thank Casper for their support of Coding 101. We welcome back to the show a lady who really has, she's taken the hearts of the Coding 101 audience, not just because of her knowledge, but because of her bubbly personality and the fact that she has so much passion for PowerShell. It's Miss Sarah Dukavich. Sarah, thank you very much for coming on to Coding 101.
Thanks for bringing me back. It's good to be back.
Now, last time, you gave our audience a little bit of homework, a little bit of a challenge. You gave us just enough information to be kind of dangerous, especially when you let us toy around with stopping processes. This week, you want to give us a bit more. You want to get the guys and the gals into actual scripting. Where should we start?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So what we're going to do is... So last week we were looking at the PowerShell console. This time, since we're writing scripts, we don't want to try to do it line by line. We're going to use what they call the PowerShell ISE, the integrated scripting environment. To start that, press the start button and then type ISE. And you'll see Windows PowerShell ISE. Now, because you guys are at a different point than I am, you're going to want to do this. You're going to want to right-click on that guy and tell it run as administrator.
Okay.
There's a reason for that. If you remember last episode, I did a misspeak on the execution policy stuff.
Right.
And so we're going to get that fixed.
We're going to fix them up on this one. Okay, good.
We're going to fix them up in this one. So when you're running Windows PowerShell ISE, what we're looking at right now, and let me open up one more because you guys probably see it looks like something like this. Let's see if it's going to load up there. There we go. So what we have... up top is the script pane. Down below here is our console. And over here to the right are all of our different commands. from drive letters to commandlets to functions to all sorts of different other things. We'll take a look at what these guys are.
And again, the commandlets are always verb noun.
Verb noun. And I'm going to show you what happened and use improper verb here in a little bit. Okay, so I'm going to close this guy just so we have better screen real estate. All right, so I'm going in the console. The reason why I'm doing the console is because execution policy is just a simple, we don't need multiple lines of code to do it. So get execution policy. Hey, how did you guys do that? Because I could actually make this disappear. So if yours does not say remote signed, this is what you want to do. You're going to do set execution policy. Now watch what's pretty cool with this integrated scripting environment. When I put dash, it says, hey, do you want to do some of these cool things? So I'm going to say, I want to set the execution policy. When I press space, yeah, look at that.
Okay, nice. It'll give you the next one.
Exactly. So now I can say, which one do I want? I don't want to do restricted because I want to be able to run my code. I don't want to be like last episode and do unrestricted because that's wild, wild west. That's anybody and everybody. I want to run safely right now with remote signed, which is I'm running my scripts here. And if they're signed scripts, digitally signed scripts, those guys will run. But not unsigned scripts, not these wild, crazy things. So then you'll say remote signed and press enter. Yeah, as Adam Bertram says, IntelliSense for the win. It's true. So IntelliSense, if you're not familiar with it, in Visual Studio and in Microsoft's other products, we have these helpful hints that as we're typing, they will show up to give us a little guidance. This pop-up here saying, hey, your execution policy has changed. This will protect you from the scripts you don't trust. What do you want to do? Do you want to change the execution policy? And I'm just going to say, yeah. This one, for those of you who started as administrator, you should not see this error message. I've already gone through this process as the administrator, and now I'm in a non-elevated ISE. All right, I'm going to clear my screen in the console. So that's just so that when we create scripts, we can go ahead and run them. So I have a custom module that I want to talk to you guys about. You will learn what the term module is here in a minute. First of all, let's see. So like we talked about how these commandlet things have verb and nouns. So these are some of the cool things I want to cover tonight. We already did an introduction last episode, talked briefly about the operating systems. So we're going to go into some commands, talk about commandlets and aliases, functions, pipelining, providers, should be modules, profiles. We'll touch on briefly. Scripting is the main thing. And then any Q&A, which, of course, here we always have questions.
You scripted your agenda.
That's awesome.
When I first did the introduction to PowerShell Talk, I created a custom module specifically for that. And so that's what I have right here. I'm going to make my console window go away a little bit so you guys can see. So I have all sorts of things to talk about based on the code that we have in here. Whoa. This is my own custom module created in PowerShell. And so we talk about things like, what's my presentation? I could do things like, and I'm going to close this up. We'll see that guy in a bit. I'm going to say get presenter, presentation agenda, presentation intro, presenter info. So if you need my contact information, that's all scripted out. We do something, and this is why I was asking. So before here, I was asking Padre for something. I'm going to do something called display preview. This should be making Adam cringe because display is an improper verb.
But
so if you guys remember,
you defined it.
So I was just like, you know, I know pretty much what's in the get verb list, and I know display is not a proper verb, and so I'm like, let's put this in here, and I'll show you here in a minute why that's like that.
This is, you know what? This brings me back to my my Zork days. I feel like I'm going to be eaten by a Gru.
So I mean, I did some customized thank you for our sponsor, talk about Hacktoberfest. And then these things here are called PowerShell Proverbs. So back in 2011, PowerShell Proverbs was a hashtag on Twitter, and I happened to catch a bunch of them and put them in my presentation. So when I gave this presentation, I made sure to put this up front. And so when people were sitting there waiting for the presentation. They're watching this, and you could see the smiles, and you can see the laugh, like, this is awesome. And this is the PowerShell community at its finest. They are an awesome group. They're hysterical. So this is part of what my module does. So in the integrated scripting environment, up at the top, we have these buttons to run our script and stop them. I'm going to say stop operation, and that way it'll stop it. Otherwise, it's going to keep looping through the proverbs. So Adam Bertram's asking, you are using Write Host? Well, let's take a look and see. Not only did I create a custom module, but I have it designed so that we can talk to the code and talk at what we're looking at here.
And so these are .NET modules or .NET objects that you've created?
Well, these are the way PowerShell works under the covers. It uses .NET objects, but I took my knowledge of scripting based on, because I've worked with bash scripting, I've worked with batch scripting. So I combined that knowledge with my .NET background and objects and kind of played around with it a little bit.
Okay.
All right, so let's take a look at how I've created that. And we'll talk, as we're looking at this, we'll talk about various things that we're seeing. So first of all, one of the things that we mentioned last episode, what with PowerShell and the cross-platform thing, is there's like no grep, no tail. We have aliases in the Linux side of things, and you use the alias command. We don't have alias here. So what I ended up doing, so if I were to fire up a regular PowerShell window, and we're still looking at the window, correct? Yep. So I'm going to fire up a regular console, one that doesn't have the module loaded. Of course, that guy doesn't want to scroll bigger.
We'll zoom in here real quick.
Okay, if you guys can zoom in there, what I'm going to say, so let's say I want to create an alias, and we're going to say alias foo equals get host or equals get command. So every time I type foo, it'll call get command. That's what my goal is, right? Now it says there's a get alias in there. Okay, so alias used to not work. They've changed
that. Is this a five? Oh, wow. Whoa, okay.
They've changed that. So alias that wasn't there before now lists the aliases.
PowerShell 5, folks.
Which kills me because an alias, that alias command on the Linux side, you use it to set the aliases. So I could say alias foo equals get command. So let's see if it's going to let me override the alias. So I can say, so the commandlet to create an alias is set alias. And then what are you aliasing to? Yeah, and then set alias. So now if I do alias, now it's going to say, what do you want to call it? Food works. You guys in the chat channel have got me on food. So now if I type food, it'll call get command. Which it does.
Nice, okay. And that's how you got display to work.
And that's how I got alias to work, was because alias, I used alias all the time on the Linux side of things. And food bar, these chat channel guys are killing me. So the alias command, that set alias, alias, set alias, is one of the things I always put in my module to show how to do that. Since it's not there. And now if they've done that in 5.0, curses, guys, that's not what alias is supposed to do. But, that's me. All right, so some other things to note. So in my host, or in my module, for the most part, you're going to see a lot of commandlets.
Right.
You're going to see that verb, noun thing.
Right.
When I create functions, I also keep that verb, noun pattern just to maintain the pattern. Just for simplicity's sake, keep it simple. So I have this function called display preview. And what it does is the first thing it does is it clears host. So what we do, like clear in the Linux side or CLS in the command side, in the DOS side, that's what clear host does. Get credits, that's a custom function that I have.
That's defined below?
That's defined below. And actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set a breakpoint there. So what I did is I pressed F9. F9 sets a breakpoint. So what's nice about this ISE, this integrated scripting environment, is that we have a debugging capability. We can set breaks in our scripts and then debug from there. I'll show you how that works here, too.
which is super cool because normal command prompts, you can't do that. You have to write out to the standard output in order to get what you need. Now you can actually debug through it, which is neat.
Exactly, exactly. So, and then what we have here on line six, so line six is a while loop. So while something is true, this is specifically an infinite loop. That way I can run this before my presentation so people could see what's going on. So it shows the credits, and then it says, okay, we're going to run PowerShell Proverbs. And I can do this to show Proverbs. I can do trivia. I can alter the script to do whatever I want to. And this is the get Proverbs. So what it does is I store all the Proverbs in a collection. Something to note, so that dollar sign on line 14 says, hey, by the way, we're going to have a variable, and it's called Proverbs. What you're not seeing at the end of line 15, but you can see at the line 16, is that there's commas at the end of those.
Oh, okay. So I was wondering about that. So it's not white space, it's the comma.
It's the comma. Yeah. Okay. So this is a string array. This is a collection of strings. Mm-hmm. So we scroll. Okay. Friends don't let friends use VB script. Ain't that the truth? But then after that, now I do a random generator. So it's okay. Something between zero and the number amount of Proverbs. That way, if I edit my Proverbs list, it automatically will get that count.
And getRandom is another commandlet you're crawling there.
Yeah, so getRandom is a commandlet that will, it's a random number generator. So actually, let me show you what it looks like down in the console. GetRandom. So I'm going to say maximum is, I don't know, 50. Minimum is zero. So it gave me six.
Yeah, that's pretty easy. Wow.
If I call it again, it gives me 2, 34. So, I mean, it's random enough for what I need.
Right, okay, yes, because we will get people who say, well, that's not truly random. But random enough is what we're looking for.
You don't have entropy generators or something,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm not getting carried away with my random. For crying out loud, I'm just playing Proverbs.
Trust me, random number generators is a sensitive topic here on the TwitTV network. So we have to qualify by saying we just want random enough. This is not crypto randomness. This is just picking something out of an array randomness.
Yes, nice and simple little thing. Write verbose is showing random is dollar sign random. So what this dollar sign random in line, that just means that, hey, I've got a string and I need to put the value of random here. So it does that all right in line like that. It's kind of handy. And then you're going to see this dollar sign quote. Dollar sign quote equals Proverbs dollar sign random. So what I'm doing is I'm storing the quote in a variable. So the write verbose is if I had the verbose turned on. So I could say, that's get Proverb. So I should be able to say.
And that's really a debugging script. It's to make sure that everything is working
so
properly.
So the verbose part, when we ran through this before, all it would do is display the Proverbs. You never saw the right verbose. But if I do get Proverb-verbose, it's not showing it now for some reason. I need to figure out why it's not showing it.
It's
for debugging purposes.
Right.
And then the dollar sign quote on line 45 stores the thing into the quote into the variable, and then 47 does the write host. So yes, Adam Bertram, I am using write host.
Boom.
And what you're seeing here, these backtick ends. So if anybody understands escape characters like new line or carriage return or tab, those are slash n, slash t, slash r in other languages. In PowerShell, for some reason, they use backticks. I don't know if somebody was drinking one night, if that made them think backtick was okay. Maybe somebody was playing with MySQL too much, because that's another place where I use backtick, because it's one of those keys nobody uses. I get my apprentices going, what is that? It's not a single quote. I'm like, no, that's a backtick. And they're like, where
why
is
do you
that?
Need
like,
three of them?
The tab key.
Why do you need three of them? Is that just the formatting?
It's formatting. Okay. I want three new lines.
All right.
Yep. Three new lines, quote, three new lines. That way, if I had anything else display after it, I mean, this is all formatting.
All right. And actually, Adam Bergen points out something good that he says that when you're putting variables inside of strings, you always need a double quote. And that single quotes are literal. So you have to make sure that you're always setting that variable using double quotes.
Correct. Good catch. So that's get Proverb. And the other thing I don't think I noted. So as we said, the dollar sign Proverbs was a string array. Dot count is something we can call on it. So anytime you're dealing with a collection, dot count will tell you how many objects are in there.
Okay, so now we've got our function that gives us a random number and pulls randomly from an array of Proverbs. And then where is it called? I forget where that function is called.
This get Proverbs is actually called right here on line 8.
Preview. Yeah, there we go.
And then this start sleep, this is just a thread sleep for 5 seconds. So it waits to go through here.
And are we going to check that one out next?
What, start sleep?
The sleep.
Sleep sounds good. That's later on.
Oh, okay.
I hope. After the end of line. some other things. So I have get home, this function here. The only reason why I have that in here is to talk about C colon versus tilde. So on the command prompt DOS side, we're familiar with figuring out what our home directory is. So what I'm going to do is CD, C colon. Yeah, CD, C colon. There we go. So in my console, you see that I'm at the C drive. But some people take a long way to get to the home directory. In PowerShell, you can do CD space tilde, and that takes you to your user's home directory. We don't have this on the Windows side. And it was funny because when I was writing my book, my co-author actually wrote in the book the long way of getting to the home directory. And I just looked at that. And I was like, Matt, why aren't you doing CD tilde? And he's like, CD tilde, what's that? I'm like, we have it in the Linux world. Tilde represents your home directory. I'm like, let me see if it works in PowerShell. And sure enough, it did. He's like, whoa, how did you know that? I'm like, this is what happens when you're cross-platform.
There you go.
This is what happens when you play around with PowerShell and check. Now, there is a commandlet out there. Get command, something about path. One too many M's in there. One of the path ones, the help file actually explains the tilde as well. So that's what that is. Let's see, what else do we need to point out in here? So again, I'm going to scroll through. You have some help syntax, the comments that we use here. There's help syntax.
Oh, by the way, we've got some people asking where can we get the Sarah code, and we will make links available so that you don't have to copy this from the screen. You will just be able to download the script and play around with it yourself.
Correct. And then we'll make it available after the recording. That way, if we change anything here, I can save it and you guys will have the updated version.
Exactly.
So
Sarah, you said that this is a module. Like, how, if you're in the command prompt and you built this module with a bunch of functions in it, how do you load the module in the command prompt?
Yep. So let's do that. So the way we do it, I'm going to get rid of it, first of all, just so you guys don't worry about that part. And that's coding 101. Okay. So now I don't have this module loaded. First of all, how do I know I don't have this module loaded? If I do a get module, pipe more, you can see that right now I have a few modules loaded, but I don't have that. Now, you can always do a get module dash list available. Again, piping through more pagination stuff. And this takes a little bit because there's a metric ton of modules.
Right, it's got to go through everything.
Yeah.
There we
go. Of course,
the
more didn't want to work in there. But you can see that there are all these different ones. Now, in this one in particular, it sees where the module is. And the reason why it sees that is because I edited what they call your PS module path. So if I were to load up my environment variables, I'm going to edit my system environment variables. And this is just as simple as do a search in your search engine for editing environment variables. And if you come down to system variables, you'll see this variable called PS module path. This will tell you where PowerShell is looking whenever it's looking for a module. So it looks in System 32 PowerShell, V1.0 modules, looks in the x86. So I have SQL Server installed, and I have some modules there. Adam Bertrand's like, wait for it. Where should you put it? The PS module path will tell you where PowerShell is looking. And before tonight's presentation, I also added my coding 101. Now, there's a catch to this. This actually doesn't work. And the reason, the reason for it is because there's that space in there.
Right, in dash. You have to do keys closer than there, right?
Oh, I'm going to do the old school DOS path.
There you go.
Tilde 1 has to come back. It must live. And yeah, Adam Bertrand, I'm about to get over there to show them env. So do that, coding 101.
But you don't want to just keep adding to that field, right?
No. I mean,
that will get messy really quickly.
No, and what I was doing here earlier with import module. So import module is how you bring in a module. I'm going to need my up arrow to go through it. Somewhere in here. There it goes. So I actually did import module and then the full path to the module.
Okay, and that will alter the field for you.
Hmm?
That will alter the field for you.
Yeah, if I tab complete it, it'll fill it in for me. That's how I did that.
Oh, fantastic. All right.
And so I could do that. And this is why I have the improper verb. So like I said, that display preview is an improper verb. It's not that display is not a verb on the approve list. So you get this handy dandy warning that says, hey, by the way, the names of some of these commands include unapproved verbs, which means that they're going to be a bit harder to find. So the things under the cover actually look for a particular set of verbs. Can actually make that go away. So let's fix that just so that we don't make cranky PowerShell people. I'm just going to say get preview.
Actually, sir, before we make the PowerShell people happy, let's go ahead and take one last break to bring us home. Because we do need to thank the second sponsor of this episode of Coding 101, and it's DigitalOcean. Now, whether or not you are a code warrior or just getting started at programming, at some point you're going to have to consider hosting. Now, what you want is you want a hosting provider that can start very basic, that can maybe give you just a little bit of processing time, just a little bit of bandwidth so that you can get your service or your application up and running and out testing with your friends, with your colleagues, with whoever you need to do your beta, and then with a touch of a button, scale it all the way up to production. Now, if you did it the old school way, well, you'd have to make sure that you have your own hardware and you have to make sure that you've got an ISP that can handle the load, and you'd have to worry about that moment at which you scale past your resources. Of course, we don't have to do that anymore because we live in a world where we can have containers, where we can have machines that bring up, come up and go down as we need them, dynamically changing as our load changes, which is why we're happy to have DigitalOcean as a sponsor of Coding 101. Now, DigitalOcean is built for developers by developers, and it's used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You get to choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, FreeBSD. One-click install lets you quickly deploy popular apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magento, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. All their servers are top-notch, built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC memory and RAID SSD storage. The servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigabytes of memory, and 640 gigabytes of SSD space. They're highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. And what I really like is they take care of all the muss and the fuss of auto backups and snapshots, so you can focus on your coding. You can deploy servers in regions all around the world with gigabit speeds, 99.99% uptime, and they give you full-featured DNS management, including the use of dedicated IPs if you need them. You've got web console access with HTML5 plus SSH, SFTP, and KVM-VNC for virtual desktops. And with an extremely active community, there's always going to be someone like you with your skill level who can guide you through a problem that you might be having with a particular integration or a particular problem that you have with deploying your app. It's really the best way to jump into hosting. And it's so easy to get started. You could deploy your own SSD cloud server in as little is 55 seconds. Imagine that, 55 seconds. So here's what we want you to do. We want you to try DigitalOcean. They have incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing with servers starting at just $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available if you just need to get up and running and pushing out really quickly to try your new tech. You can start at less than a penny per hour, but we're going to make it so that you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account, you can go to the billing section and enter the promo code C101 and get a free $10 credit. That's right, free, folks. Why wouldn't you try DigitalOcean? Why wouldn't you see if maybe that's the best way for you to get your app to the world? That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com, DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code C101 in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of Coding 101. Now, Sarah, when I so rudely interrupted you, you were just about to get into, the knowledge that we as Nublets need in order to do PowerShell properly. So I know we've got an MVP in the chat room. Let's make sure that we do him right. Go ahead and tell us, what do we need to make sure that our environment is set up properly?
Okay, so you Nublets with commandlets. I think that's what I'm going to call my next talk.
I like that. Okay, good.
Nublets with commandlets. So I know that display preview, I know that that display is not a proper verb. Just because I can come to get verb, and after it's done running, I can look at the list and say, okay, you know what? I know that display is not in there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just say, because I'm getting something, I could do get. Or because I'm showing something, I could do show. I think show's legit. Yep, there's show. Nice. Show is a legit verb. So we're going to show that. So I'm going to save that. But just because I save my module file doesn't mean that I automatically have it updated in my session. If I take a look at something I can do, get command dash module, and as we know what this from when I imported it, it's called Coding 101. And if I press enter, see that it still says display preview?
Oh, yes, okay.
That's what I've got loaded in. So what I need to do is I need to get rid of the module and reload it. So what I do is I'm going to say remove dash module, Coding 101, press enter.
And that should...
that should take it out. And actually, if you're not sure, I can always say get module, and you can see that I still have these guys loaded.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
I'm gonna do the import, and then we'll run get module again so you can see what this looks like. So the import, I'm just importing that whole long path to the module. And I'm going to, after I do that...
How important is this for housekeeping? Because obviously, if you start importing so many modules, that directory gets out of control and that path gets out of control. That's not good for you. So do you have a rule of thumbs as to when you bring them in and when you clear them?
So when I bring them in and when I clear them, I bring in modules as I use them, as I need them. So let's say, for example, I need to deal with IIS. So that's a web server. In web server administration, they have a module that was called web administration, so I would get module web administration or import that as needed. The problem is that there's the auto-loading of modules in PowerShell. That happened, was that version 3, I believe? And so it would just bring it in.
Right.
And so actually, now it's one of those.
Adam Bertram in the chat room, again, he's an MVP. He has an excellent Nublet suggestion, and that is, if we're looking for a list of legitimate verbs, there is
get verb,
and go ahead and show them get verb so that you get yourself a list of all the legitimate verbs that you can use.
And that's exactly what I was looking at here before to figure out what I could replace get with. So I could do get verb. I don't think it's going to let me do this, but let me see anyhow. Ha.
Ah, grid view. Cool. Ah.
So, and unfortunately, I don't think it's going to let me zoom it. Can you guys zoom it on your end?
We can zoom in on our side.
Okay. So what's nice about looking at it in the grid view is I could do something like, okay, add criteria. I want to find group. And maybe I want to see only common. It's going to... take it, press enter. So now I have only the common verbs. I'm going to expand that. And right now it's automatically sorted alphabetically, so I can look and see, okay, well, there's get and there's show. Get assumes that I'm returning an object to later work with. Show is showing that there's a display in there. So
right.
That's why I'm going with show. And so that's why you use show preview. What's nice here is you can do get help, get verb. And I'm going to scroll through so you can see some stuff like that. I don't know if it's going to show me much of anything. Get help, get verb. online. So what that does, and I'm going to bring that over here, is it goes to the article on TechNet and says, okay, this is a help file.
Ooh, wait. Okay, well, you just buried that. That's actually a very useful commandlet there.
All right, so let me go back and I'll run that again. So we have this get help. With PowerShell, if the get help isn't updated or if it might not show what you want it to show, you can always come and do the online version. So it's get help and then whatever topic, be it a command, be it one of the abouts, and then dash online. And if I press enter, what this does is this just opened up Chrome, and I'm going to bring that tab back over into my shared screen. And so this is getverb. Notice this one. So this is what the help file is, and I'm going to zoom that on my end so you guys can see it a little bit better. So you should see this is Microsoft TechNet. If you're not familiar with it, they have a lot of the help documentation here in terms of IT stuff. This is for PowerShell 5.0, but if we wanted to see it for 4.0 or 3.0, we click on that, and you can do that, which is pretty cool. This tells us the syntax, which to some people, they're like, okay, I can follow this. And others, especially when I was a beginner, as a junior dev, I saw this kind of notation. I'm like, what the heck is this? This is gibberish. But what's nice is if you scroll down, so this is a description of what does this do. It says that these are commands that use unapproved verbs, can run, but they're going to show a warning, which is what we saw. It shows if I want to see only a certain type of verb, so if I only want to see common verbs, if I only want to see verbs with a certain pattern, can do that. Some of the other options in here, some of the common parameters, which we can look at. But I'm going to scroll down a little further. So that talks about notes.
Sarah, quick question. That online parameter, does that only work with pushing get help? Or can I use that to trigger the browser with pretty much anything?
I think it's just on the get help and other commandlets that may support that. So it's one of those, when you do get help, so this guy, get verb, only takes verb. And then the standard are the standard parameters. Some of them will take dash online. If they have dash online, then it'll tie to it. I know get help is the main one.
So it's not a magical way for me to be able to push open a browser. That's just a parameter for specific commandlets.
We'll talk about browser stuff when we're working with the API. Those are other commandlets that – let's not open that can of worms just yet. But what I love about the PowerShell help documents, both online and in the command window, is that they have examples. So you can see get verb, and it says, okay, this is what it's going to do. Get verb and unstar shows only the verbs that start with un. So, I mean, these examples are nice. And what's nice, too, is I can go back to the ISE. I'm going to switch back to the ISE. I'm going to do the same thing. So I'm going to first, I'm going to get rid of my script pane. So up here in the right corner, there's a little arrow that I can hide it or show it. I'm going to hide it and clear it. Get help, get verb. And for me,
Adam
I'm
also
dash.
Points out, Adam points out a good point too, is get help, you can also use man, which is kind of cool. It's very similar to the Unix version.
Yeah, so I could say man, get verb. Dash examples. Why is that so sad? I think it's dash example. No. Yeah, so man. So you can do man. What can of worms are you guys opening over there?
Mr. Bertram in the chat room is telling us that there's different ways to push open browsers.
Yeah. No. Let's not talk about that.
not yet.
But he does make a valid point of the three commandlets when you're just getting started. So get help, because that's your, oh my gosh, I'm trapped and I don't understand what I'm doing. So let's say I want to get help, get command, dash examples. There's not much in these examples today. So if you guys remember last episode, how I told you that the help files aren't included, notice in here, this get help, get command examples, and it's not really useful because the remarks say get help cannot find the help files for this commandlet on this computer. to install, I'll just say update help.
Yeah, you have to go get them.
So if I update help, so instead of doing that, I'm just going to say get help, get command online, and that'll show you. It's going to be the same kind of deal.
Right. So, but you could download the help file to your local station, and then you wouldn't have to go online. But we would have to do it right now.
Ah, I can tell it. Just do its thing. Just so you guys can see what it looks like. This is the computer that's plugged in over the Ethernet cable, so it should be fairly quick.
That you can looks see like one git there, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just updating help files for each of the modules that it knows about that it could see. It shouldn't try to grab anything for coding 101. Say shouldn't.
Just watch for C101. Oh, there we go.
Wow, cool. We had... Oh. Yeah. We're not going to see it because I'm not running this as administrator.
Right. Which, by the way, we did on purpose. You pointed out at the beginning.
Yeah. So this is one of those, yeah.
It's one of those moments.
That's how that works.
We are coming to the end, close to the end of this episode. We're going to have to send the folks off into the ether. But it's going to be a month before we see you again. I'd like to give the folks at home some homework. So in the first episode, we got them playing around with PowerShell. We showed them how they could invoke it, how they could start playing around with the commands, how they could start looking at the commandlets. In this episode, we've actually got working code now. They're going to be able to go to our show notes and download your script so that they could see how loops work and see how functions are set. What would you want them to do? Where would you want them to be by the time they come back to your module in November?
Okay, so for the homework, take a look at this. Take a look at commandlets. Take a look at functions. Take a look at the help files. Understand that there's the examples thing versus the full versus online. And bring questions, because we've given you a lot of stuff to run with. So if there's anything in particular you want to see, that's fine. Coming up, we're going to look into how do we put all these little pieces, parts together? How do we put the functions together? How do we put the commands together? And we'll talk about this module a little bit and how the module is built and why it's called a module. Because a module, as we'll learn, is a container of things. Right. So we'll talk about how we can build that. What's the commandlet to build that? And then we'll talk about providers. So you guys will get to look forward to that as well.
Fantastic. So we've got plenty coming, including how to use PowerShell to play with the TWT API. So that's all coming in a future episode of Coding 101. We could only borrow Sarah for these two modules because she's an incredibly busy person. Of course, she is the owner of Cleveland Tech Events. If you're ever in Cleveland, if you're ever in need of a good meetup, she is the person to contact. She's also the person to contact for good dim sum. By the way, you made me really hungry after that last tweet.
The channel started it. They were talking about food before we started recording.
Food is so good. But Sarah,
Canadian Thanksgiving is coming up, so make sure to give them shout-outs. Happy Thanksgiving to our Canadians. They're eating lots of turkey. Good stuff.
Canadian Thanksgiving. Sarah, could you tell the folks where they can find you? So, I mean, of course, they're going to find you in our show notes, but where else can they reach out to see the work that you do?
You can find me on Twitter, most of the social media things. I am Saduki just about everywhere. I blog at codinggeekette.com. I keep track of the technical events in the Cleveland and Akron areas at clevelandtechevents.com. Those are the big places to find me. And then you'll see me speaking in person at CodeMash in Sandusky this coming January.
Fantastic. Sarah Dukevich, you are our code warrior. Thank you so very much again for being with us for PowerShell.
Thank you guys for having me. This is a lot of fun.
Of course, we also want to thank our co-host, Lou Maresca. We wouldn't have Coding 101 without you, my friend. Could you tell the people where they can find you and your work? Aside from here on the TWT TV network, of course, co-host of Coding 101, you are often a co-host or guest on This Week in Enterprise Tech, but you're a pretty busy person outside of that.
Absolutely, yeah. So you can always find me, obviously, on Coding 101 and love doing Twyatt, too. And then, of course, you can find me on Twitter at LouMM. It's the at LOUMM. And then, of course, all my work that I do at Microsoft, you can find me at crm.dynamics.com.
Lou, Sarah, I thank you. Thank you very much for this fun episode of Coding 101. I also want to thank you, the person who comes back week after week to watch Coding 101. Now, remember, it's important that you go to our show page, twit.tv/coding101. coding, because there you'll find the notes for this episode. You don't want to have to copy things off the screen. So we've got Sarah's link to the first script that she gave you, as well as this more advanced script. So if you want to start playing with it, the best way to do it is to go to the show notes page, again, twit.tv/coding, and just download it straight from the source. Also, because they'll be downloading from Saduki's website, you'll be able to get the most updated version of the script file. Also, we want to thank everyone here who makes this show possible. That means Lisa and Leo for letting us do Coding 101. That means my TD for the last two episodes. Anthony, do you have a camera on yourself? Can you say hello to the folks?
Everyone.
Yes, that's Anthony. He's behind the scenes a lot. And aside from blowing up the TriCaster, he pushes all the buttons that make us look good. Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballaser. This has been Coding 101. And Lou, you want to take us out?
Absolutely. End of line.